back yourself.
This is a video about how and why to back yourself. Yes, you specifically, you who has posting anxiety, you who doesn't put yourself out there, you who stays quiet while the worst people alive get louder and louder and louder. I need you to make more noise. I need you to back yourself. All right. In this video, we are going to talk about why and how to back yourself in 12 different strategies. Some of these are tips, some of these are questions, some of them are strategies, some of them are mental models, just ways of seeing things, but all of them can hopefully help you back yourself. The idea isn't that you take all 12 on board, it's that you watch this video, and honestly, if like three stick, that is huge. Number one of 12. But what will blank think? This is the idea that when you are about to do something that backs yourself, when you are about to, film yourself in a forest, you might have that voice of resistance. What I've found to be helpful is instead of just feeling that resistance amorphously, giving it a label because it trivializes it. For example, I know that there are many things that I haven't done because in retrospect, what I've actually been thinking is, but what will the dumbest people alive think? It's like, why am I worried about that? Yours might be more personal, but what will my judgy coworker think? Or my cousin, or my stepdad, or the people that I used to hang out with, or someone who used to bully me in high school who now watches every one of my Instagram stories. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? What will they think? Maybe you think about comments and the comments that you don't want, and that thought actually might just be, but what will the most chronically online sociopaths think? I reckon they're gonna hate it. I reckon whatever it is, they're just gonna hate it, you know? Of course, you can flip this as well and start to think about people who do support you, but what will the people I love and respect who want me to try think? What will they think? They'll probably just be stoked that I'm doing something. They'll be like, yay, good for you. But all that really matters is, what do you think? That feels cheesy, but I'm deadly serious. And I know I've said this a bunch on my channel, but I truly think that if you can only chase one thing, chase your own self-respect. Next one. The arena. This is just a way to understand people who do stuff and people who critique stuff. It's from a Theodore Roosevelt speech made a bit more popular by Brene Brown speech later on. Basically, it says the only people that count are the people in the arena. Here's how it goes. The man in the arena. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who, at the best, knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who, at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly. That's a speech from Paris, 1910. It's beautiful. Basically saying, look, if you are doing something, you count. If you are just criticizing, you don't. It's the classic maxim of, if you wouldn't take advice from them, don't take criticism from them. There are so many people who will hold us back. Whether they know they're holding us back or not is a different story. But people who might just say, oh, you sure about that? Oh, I don't know, man. Don't think that you want to do that. And sometimes their intentions are good, like the classic example of a parent trying to, you know, steer you towards safety, but the model that they have of the world stopped being relevant like 20 years ago. And you're like, yeah, I know that you're trying to help me, but I don't know. I kind of got to do this. I put the arena right at the front because I think it's a really good way to distinguish whether or not someone is a hater or someone who is genuinely trying to help you. Is it destructive feedback or constructive feedback? Usually you know, but it can be helpful to have a heuristic. And that's why I like the arena. Are they in the arena? Are they in an arena that I care about? Would I take advice from them? If your answer is no, generally speaking, they are a garden variety hater. But what's good about this is haters equals indicators. Indicators that you are growing. They're growing pains. Of course, growing pains are still painful. And that is where this next idea comes in. This is a game that I call comment bingo. Instead of fearing annoying people in your comment section, treat them like a game. Treat them like a little scavenger hunt. Now, while these comments apply to the internet specifically, it's really more about just like unwarranted and unwanted feedback that you get in general. Because obviously not everybody's dream and not everybody's version of backing yourself involves the internet. Some people back themselves to, I don't know, go work in a hospital or start a business, have a family, quit a job, whatever it happens to be. But in general, I think the feedback is pretty applicable. I put them into three broad categories. People with no curiosity, people with no boundaries, and people with no agency. No curiosity, a catchphrase they might have is, humans are not a rich tapestry. My gut reaction is 100% correct. These are the people who've just like already made up their mind and then they just try to argue their point as opposed to like, I don't know, thinking. People with no boundaries, their catchphrase might be, who do you think you are? Some sort of human that I can't control? Somebody else, an entire separate being from me that I have no sway over? What the hell's up with that? And then somebody with no agency, people who are impossibly dumb and impossibly angry. And I know that these kind of sound like insults, but this is any of us in a bad mood. You know what I mean? I like to give these people the benefit of the doubt too, that they're probably just having a really awful time. So the no curiosity people, gut reaction was 100% correct. Got a couple of examples here. Hi, most annoying person you've ever encountered here. I noticed this post you wrote in 3 seconds doesn't line up with every experience I've ever had. This is extremely harmful to me, the main character of the universe. Other types of this one, I've never personally experienced or heard of this before. Therefore, you are lying for attention. Here's one that I actually got. Can you speak without the accent? I can't understand what in hell you're saying. You have an accent. Here you also find like just the worst of the worst people, sexism, racism, people who don't understand what humor is. I find it incredibly troubling that you're using humor as a coping mechanism instead of hyperventilating and shrieking at people like me. All right, let's look at no boundaries. Here are some fun examples. Hey, me and the other crabs in the bucket have noticed that you're actually getting near the top, and I'm like, sorry, but that's low-key problematic. There are quite a few national cultures that don't encourage being the best of the best. I'm from one. I'm actually from two as a dual citizen, Australia and New Zealand, which suffer from something called tall poppy syndrome. Like, don't stand out, standing out is bad. Oh my gosh, there's the New Zealand for you. Because we'll still be in the bucket. So yeah, if you can maybe take accountability and get back in the bucket. I love that. Here you got a Hard Times article. Chapel Roan criticized for not using platform to single-handedly end conflict in Middle East. A lot of family stuff falls into here as well. You know why strangers support you more than the people you know? Because the people you know have a hard time accepting that you guys came from the same place and yet they're in the same place. Here you get all the really fun comments as well. People with no boundaries say things like literally kill yourself. Don't. There you go. There's a counterpoint. You ever get stuff like this? This is a Reductress article. Why I'm picking a fight with someone who already agrees with me on 99% of issues. Like, what a waste of energy. And then, on the boundaries thing, nobody gets angrier than a narcissist being accused of something they definitely did. See it a lot in politics, don't you? And then no agency. You gotta feel bad for them because their brain's fried, you know? Hey, I skimmed your tweet and saw some words I recognize. Anyway, here's my opinion on what I imagine you said. I was talking to my friend Bryce about this, and he talks about them as if they're like a buzzword sleeper cell. They hear one word they know, and then they launch into an argument, whether it's relevant or not is just, you know, not relevant. Also in this category, you get people who can't really generalize. Like either they have like a moral purity test that you have to pass, or they don't understand that being born into a world you didn't design doesn't make you a hypocrite if you disagree with it. You know what I mean? Oil corporations should pay more for climate damages, yet you use oil. Curious. I am very intelligent. Here's a nice little Sidney Smith quote. A bigot delights in public ridicule, for he begins to think he is a martyr. Mom, can you pick me up? They're writing paragraphs under my meme page comment. And then one more Hard Times article, which is kind of like a warning of how these people can get in your head. Help, I read the comments section, and now I'm researching Charlemagne's military tactics on Wikipedia so I can win an argument with a complete stranger about Red 40. It reminds me of this person's observation that, like, when you watch a fly spend, like, a decent chunk of its life just on your ceiling, and you're like, man, you don't have that much time, what are you doing? Is that what God thinks of us when he sees us on our phone? Like, come on, guy, get off. You don't have that much time, what are you doing? By gamifying these haters as things that you can collect, it can remove the sting of their comment, and it reminds you that they are unoriginal and reactionary. Get 3 in a row, and you have one solid indicator. Of course, as we tally up these growing pains, it's worth looking at the system that your growth threatens, the system that you're growing from. 4, caconomics. This is a fun word. It's the strange preference that people have for low-quality outcomes. Basically, the economics of the worst. Kind of like an exchange where two people turn a blind eye to how poor the other person's product is. Like a builder who doesn't really get the job done on time, but don't worry because they don't care if you pay on time. In the words of the philosopher Gloria Origi, caconomic worlds are worlds in which people not only live with each other's laxness, but expect it. I trust you not to keep your promises in full because I want to be free not to keep mine and not feel bad about it. Basically, it's like this weird implicit social contract that people have to be mediocre. Now, there are good aspects to this. This writer, Aloho Amami, writes, it's kind of like a 3-step process wherein you and I trust each other to underperform. 2, we are experts at playing lip service, but we both know what's up. And 3, we're both happy with the result. But as she and also Gloria Origi points out, that happiness is happy at first. But then what? What happens when all you're doing is trading a shitty product for chump change, and somebody keeps calling that shitty product high quality, world-class goods, and the people with the chump change keep saying, oh, I'm paying top dollar, I'm giving this a 5-star review. What happens when mediocrity and the social contract around it goes on for too long? Well, I believe that this is a cool way to explain slop. Low quality content, like Netflix making second screen friendly shows, being traded for low quality attention. People who are quite literally second screening. And as Origi writes, each low quality exchange erodes the overall system in the long run. Why is this relevant to backing yourself? Because I think that this is essentially what has happened to a lot of the art and entertainment that is in the world today. I think that a movie studio knows that they're just going to make a popcorn movie, and then I think the moviegoers know this is going to be great, you're going to see explosions, it's going to be awesome. Nothing wrong with that. But when it's only that, you do tend to lose out on experimental and avant-garde and even the high-quality stuff. And what I find is those are the people who are first to be quiet. Those are the people who are first to stop backing themselves when the landscape looks like slop. And that is, I mean, this is kind of the crux of why I'm making this video, because I want to see a change. I want better quality stuff. And I mean, there is better quality stuff, but like, I want to see it big, you know? YOLO. I'm deadly serious about this. I've made this point a lot, but YOLO should never have died as a phrase. The idea of this is to remember that this is no dress rehearsal. You literally only live once. And when we apply this to backing yourself, it's basically extrapolating all of the limiting stories that we have and then wondering what they might look like on our tombstone. Limiting beliefs, excuses, and stories that hold you back. For me, a big one that kind of crosses all three is whatever project it is, some big project, I'll start next week when things clear up. I have this weird next week fantasy where I'm like, yeah, but things will be easier then, right? And then they never are. But it's like, all right, hasn't changed for over a decade now. I think next week's never coming. So I imagine that on my tombstone. That's step one. And then step two, you do a pre-mortem. So in this hypothetical future where you can, I guess, somehow see your tombstone, maybe you're a ghost. Why did you fail? What specifically did you do that caused this thing to stop you from chasing your dreams? What was it? Me, it's excuses and self-consciousness. Those are the two big ones. And then three, come back to the present and ask yourself, how can you pre-solve these problems? For me, pre-solving the excuses is by having accountability friends. So like people I'll message and I'll be like, yo, for example, this video, if I don't post this video on the internet, here's a very unflattering photo of myself. Can you please post this instead? So then you got the fear of God in you. And then as for the self-consciousness, it's kind of everything in this video. Number six, optimize for other outcomes. Basically, this is the idea of questioning what we're told to want. You know, when you make something, you should make it for money, or you should make it for praise, or you should make it so as many people see it as possible. And to think about other things that it is possible to want when you make something. Maybe you just want to skill up. Maybe you know that idle hands are the devil's plaything, so you want to keep them busy. Maybe you want to post something out of spite. Here's my diagram of the spite house. There's this thing, my friend Amy McNee, she put it on her Instagram. She said, all that art with zero likes, keep it up there as an act of defiance against the algorithm. And I was like, yeah. Hell yeah. And it made me think of spite houses and like how something without many views that you still love is going to be like this like beautiful piece of unique character in someone else's otherwise dystopian landscape. Love it. Maybe you just want to make friends. Maybe you want to make something because you want to meet somebody. Maybe you want to make a time capsule for the future. Maybe everything you make is not to be discovered by the current set of humans who are alive now, but to the all new set of humans who will be alive in like 100 years time. Maybe that's what you want to do. You want to talk to them. Maybe you want to put stuff out there because you want to optimize for luck. If things are out there, things happen. The only way to guarantee your failure is to just not do anything. Maybe you want to meet someone specific or increase your network. Maybe you want to get the message across to very specific people. Or maybe you just, like I said before, want your own self-respect. However, the fastest way to get that is to do the things that you say you're going to do that you keep putting off. Push beyond your comfort zone. Alrighty. Next one. Seven. The butterfly effect. We all know the butterfly effect. Little butterfly flaps its wings through a series of events and a bit of chaos theory that eventually causes a tornado somewhere in Kansas. But what if it wasn't a butterfly, but an utterfly? That works in my head. What if the butterfly was actually just something that you said? What if a phrase that you put out into the world became the figurative equivalent of a tornado? The good kind of tornado. Still worked in my head, I swear. Well, let's have a look here. Basically, what if something you said caused a big change? Because everything starts somewhere. Everything that has been a big change began with something small. This is a beautiful quote. I love this quote so much. It's just something I found on like a Tumblr screenshot. But it goes, when people talk about traveling to the past, they worry about radically changing the present by doing something small. You know, stepping on a fly and then all of a sudden, now lizards don't exist. But barely anyone in the present really thinks that they can radically change the future by doing something small. And I think this is so damn true, dude. Like, it's so easy to feel hopeless and like the future is set in stone, like it's locked in. But I think the only people that actually benefit from you feeling like the future is inevitable are the people who currently are benefiting from the present. Think about your own lifetime. There have been so many once in a lifetime events. The rest of our lives are like Natasha Bedingfield levels of unwritten, you know? So the idea here is more or less to empower yourself and to remember that anything that does happen that is big begins small. And why not you? Why couldn't you do it? Change comes from somewhere. You can even see this in your own life. If you look at some of the things that you like, that you're a fan of, that you think are criminally underrated, that you think just need more popularity. And you're like, why aren't people paying attention to this? Two examples. Let's go. A podcast that I love called The Program. It's like the greatest piece of future dystopian sci-fi or utopian sci-fi, depending on how you listen to it. But I'm like, why doesn't this have more listeners? Go listen to The Program. It's incredible. Beautiful, 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 beautiful fiction. Or like one of my favorite albums. I'm fairly certain that I am like one of 10 listeners. And I listen to this thing like all the time. Came out in 2013. It's called Terminal Grouse by Sweet Teens. It's just this Australiana punk folk ballad kind of album. And it's beautiful. And yet there is a disconnect when you think about what you put out into the world. You're like, well, if it isn't universally completely accepted by absolutely everybody, why would it ever have an impact with anybody? It's crazy, man. It's crazy how we can do that to ourselves. Hey, rig the game. When you make something, whether it's conscious or not, you might have this idea that it is win or lose. Either I make something great and people love it, or I make something that sucks and people hate it, or I don't make something at all. The idea of rigging the game is to make both outcomes a win. Win or learn. Nothing super new here, but there is a cool practical thing that you can do. Buy a tiny notebook, one of these types of things, and at the end of each day, ask yourself, what did I learn? Or if you want a bonus question, this is what I do. This has been like one of the best journaling prompts ever because it's just so simple, but it also, I don't know, it's good for your memory. It's good for reflection. Quite literally ask, what did I get done today? And then at the end, what was the biggest lesson? It takes like 2 minutes every night, but it really does start putting your mindset into this frame.
All right, I got to get out of this rain, man.
Also check out where I am. Number 9, recognize that there's stakes either way. When it comes to big decisions in life, the kinds of things that are on your mind while you're thinking about, should I back myself? Should I not? It can be quite easy to compare fear to comfort, like the fear of doing that versus the comfort of not doing it. But I think it is much more accurate and practical to think about it as fear and fear, because there are stakes to not backing yourself. There are stakes to not making big changes. So level the playing field. You got stakes for backing yourself and also stakes for staying small. And the idea is that we compare this fear to this fear. You take the worst case scenario of both and then you pick. So for example, backing yourself, the stakes are you face criticism, ridicule, and willful misinterpretation. People don't like you. And the stakes for staying small, you die sad and bitter and leave no contribution. You don't like you. And when you compare those, things start to get pretty clear. More rain! Bring it on, baby. Number 10, call it an experiment. This is about whatever it is that you do, whatever it is that you make, whatever project you're embarking on, framing it as an experiment as opposed to something that desperately needs to succeed. I think that this is a get out of your own way free card. Some examples of this are like giving yourself a time frame to fulfill or to act a certain way, like 30 days of painting figurines. Or you can give it a constraint from the outside, like a 24-hour film project or 1-hour portrait or whatever it happens to be, but basically like going into it with a constraint. Another one, I just recently did this, took me 2 years, the alphabet of, so this is my alphabet superset, A to Z of documentaries. It was fun. Doing blank until blank. Good example would be Matt Diavela's old podcast where he had this through line where he was interviewing people and then ultimately the idea was that he would eventually get The Rock on his podcast. It made something that could feel heavy, like I've got to start this podcast and do all these things, feel playful. Or maybe it's testing a hypothesis, like, if I pretend to back myself for 1 year, will it become my natural state? Hey guys, nobody judge me. Can no one call me cringe for like a year? I'm just trying to test something. Thanks in advance. That feels so weird to say out loud, but like, that's kind of the idea. Be like, hey, just testing something. It's research for all humankind. On that note, we get to 11. 11. LARP it till you learn it. LARP, live action role play, for those of you who aren't part of your Renaissance Fair group. LARP it till you learn it. What would you do? Or what would you with a cool hat and sunnies do? This is my take on that classic phrase, fake it till you make it, which has merit and it also has critique. But what I don't like about it is it can sometimes feel like you are measuring things externally. You know, fake it till you make it. Like, do you believe me? Does that person believe me? Okay, so it's going to happen, right? Whereas LARP it till you learn it, I feel like it's an internal thing. It's like, I'm going to pretend to be this, knowingly pretending to be this until I internalize it. So it's asking yourself, what would you do versus what would a confident you do in this situation? And sometimes it can be that simple. I used to work in advertising and my creative director, anytime we get stuck, he'd be like, yo, what would Nike do right now? And it would somehow just make me think of new ideas. And I'm like, was it that easy? Did I just need to ask the right question? So I don't know. If you're at the precipice of making some big decision, it can just be as simple as, what would a cooler version of you do? What would you, if you were just like 10% better, do? Because in the end, we are what we repeatedly do. Not Aristotle. Also, if you like fantasy or world building, this can be really fun because you can build your LARP avatar. You can build your ideal you. You can create your character, whoever it is that you need to be in those big decision moments where it's like, okay, what would blank do? You can start to build them, draw them, do whatever, like really get to know them. How do they act? How can you LARP it? Things that might help here are, do you think of people that you respect or admire, or even people that you are jealous of? All of those things can be indicators of the direction that you actually want to take. And then finally, we get to 12, feed your mind and mind your feed. You know that classic phrase, you're the average of the five people that you hang out with most. Usually when you hear that, you think about it in physical sense, but there is also the online sense. So yes, the five people that you see the most offline, but it's also the five people you consume the most online, who will inform the way that you live your life, what you make, how you think and feel, your behavior. Now, it's one thing to say, be mindful of what you put in your head. But what I like about this frame, thinking of yourself as like the average of the five people you consume the most, is it becomes practical. And you're like, okay, who would I like to be the average of? And then I'll just consume them. Instead of this being an accident and you just being a side effect of this, you can reverse engineer it. You can make it intentional. You say, okay, I want this person's ability to talk, this person's ideas, I want this person's work ethic, I want this person's aesthetic, and I want this person's sense of fun. Now, watch the winds do this. Ha ha, that was cool. A question that you might ask is, if you had to consume without algorithms, who would you pick? You can actually put this to the test. If you're a big podcast fan, get like a podcast player that is only RSS feeds, and you can actually like test yourself in doing this. Or I saw somebody on my last video say, make all YouTube open to the subscription page, so it is just the people that you want. Something that I found really helpful is to think about things that go into my head as ingredients. If you wouldn't stick poison in your food, why would you stick it in your head? And that is all 12. But what will blank say? Arena, comment bingo, Kakonomics, YOLO, optimize for other outcomes, butterfly effect, rig the game, stakes either way, experiment, LARP it till you learn it, feed your mind and mind your feed. And if you noticed, that all spelt back yourself, because I find that kind of thing fun. Anyway, enjoy. Hope you have a beautiful day. I read a book about a lot of these things and so much more. It's called Doom and Bloom, The Case for Creativity in a World Hooked on Panic. Just came out. So yeah, check that out. Link's in the description. Hope you're liking the videos. Thank you so much for the response on the last video. That was really cool. Anyway, have a beautiful day. Catch ya.